Thank you very much for that kind introduction. I thought what I would do this evening is read out a relatively short paper. I hope it'll only take me about 45 minutes or so to read, and then have about the same amount of time for questions. So the title is Truly God is Beautiful and He Loves Beauty, Aesthetics and Metaphysics in the Islamic Tradition. In this talk, I'll try to substantiate two complementary arguments. Firstly, the Tawheed, understood both as the oneness of reality and as a metaphysical vision of the unifying power of the One. Tawheed enables one to plumb the spiritual significance of beauty. And secondly, the spiritual assimilation of beauty deepens one's intuition of the intrinsic nature of the real, of the One. In other words, it opens our eyes to the truth expressed by the prophetic utterance, truly God is beautiful and He loves beauty. Let's begin this exploration of the relationship between the doctrine of Tawheed and the meaning of beauty with the following revealing statement by Titus Burckhardt, the great metaphysician, sage and scholar of sacred art of the last century. The most profound link between Islamic art and the Qur'an lies not in the form of the Qur'an, but in its haqiqah, its formless essence, and more particularly in the notion of tawheed, unity or union, the way Burckhardt translates tawheed, unity or union, with its contemplative implications. Islamic art is essentially the projection into the visual order of certain dimensions or aspects of divine unity. So, what are these contemplative implications of Tawheed? One might say very summarily that the traditions of Islamic art and spirituality taken together provide the answer to that question. Because traditionally, artists and craftsmen were not just pious, they were also deeply spiritual. And this explains why the majority of artists in the medieval and pre-modern Muslim world were members of Sufi orders. Their art was an expression of their spirituality, and their spirituality was the creative source of their art. In the Islamic tradition, art is an expression of the artist's ability to contemplate the beauty of divine unity, and to translate this intuition of divine beauty into a visible, audible, or material form. This traditional art can be qualified as sacred in the measure that God Himself is the true agent of the art. And when I say God Himself, masculine gender, it's understood that I'm translating Allah, which is masculine in gender, but were I to be translating the essence of God into English, I would be saying she, because the essence of Allah is feminine in gender, grammatically speaking. Traditional art can be qualified as sacred in the measure that God Himself is the true agent of the art. The human artist is, to one degree or another, effaced before the creativity of God, which, as it were, passes through the human agent. And this explains why so many traditional artists preferred to remain anonymous. The artist's self-effacement before the art, which manifests through him or her, finds its contemplative archetype in the state which the Sufis call fana, extinction. If the spiritual vision of the artist is organically related to the haqiqah, or spiritual essence of the Qur'an, we need to appreciate what we might call the art of Qur'anic worship, a form of worship which transforms the very substance of the worshipper. The soul itself becomes fashioned by the Qur'an into a beautiful work of art, in accordance with the barakah, the blessings emanating from both the spiritual essence and the sonoral form of the revealed word. This transformation comes about through the miraculous power of the Qur'an. What the uncreated word of God is takes precedence over what it says. Just as what God is precedes logically and ontologically what God says. So, of course, what God is comes before, precedes logically and ontologically what God says. Likewise, what the Quran is far more important spiritually, metaphysically, and transformatively than simply what the Quran says. This is why Burckhardt referred to the formless essence of the Quran rather than just the formal doctrines of the Quran. It's haqiqah, it's spiritual reality. The speech of God conveys and constitutes the very presence of God. And this presence, in turn, imparts truth. The Quran is thus, properly speaking, a theurgy, a means by which the presence of God makes itself available to those who engage with it totally. That is, with all their presence. The presence of God makes itself present to those who are fully present to the Quran. In other words, who engage with it with their heart and soul, and not just with their tongue and mind. The Quran is therefore not only scriptural revelation and sonoral recitation, it's also divine luminosity and miraculous energy, enlightening truth and transformative power. In the Quran we find the following similitude. A good word is as a good tree, its roots firm, its branches in heaven, giving its fruits at every season by the permission of its Lord. Surah 14, verses 24 to 25. Martin Lings draws out the contemplative and practical implications of this similitude as follows. He applies the principle in question to the recitation of the Quran, which is the good word, Al-Kalima Tayyiba, par excellence. A Qur'an recitation must not be thought of as limited to this world, he says. It has repercussions up to the heavens where its fruits await the believer. End of the quote. So as regards the relationship between the Qur'an and sacred art in general, we should take careful note of this penetrating insight by Titus Burckhardt. The revealed word reverberates in the musical order, he says, and this is most assuredly the firmest possible link between right and art. End of the quote. The revealed music of the divine speech, Kalam Allah, might be seen as the archetype of all musicality. And this is one of the most tangible and transformative modes of beauty in creation. It's a kind of descent of supraformal celestial melodies within the field of audible terrestrial sound. The Sheikh al-Alawi, the great Sufi master of the 20th century, about whom Dr. Lings wrote a very famous biography, the Sheikh al-Alawi makes a remark that is very pertinent here. Music is not crippled with the dry bones of words. Liquid and flowing like a stream, it carries us into the presence of God. This in turn might be seen as a comment on the saying of the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, amongst the greatest of the beauties of creation, he said, is the fine intonation of a beautiful voice. Naqmat al-Sawt al-Hasan. Such statements help us to understand that the melodic recitation of the Qur'an can be seen as an intrinsic dimension of Islamic art, both in itself and in its effects. It generates that profound sense of peace, of harmony, and happiness, which is a crucial component of artistic creativity. Some of you may have read Titus Burckhardt's beautiful description of the comb maker in his book on Fez, where one of the striking things about the traditional comb maker is that he was constantly reciting the Quran as he was working. And this is altogether typical of the traditional artist. We could refer to the miraculous transformation of the soul by the beauty and majesty of the very sound of divine speech as a musical alchemy. And this is linked to the Sufi symbolism of the heart being polished by the remembrance of God. The remembrance of God, whether through the invocation of the divine name or divine names, or through recitation of the divine speech, the Quran itself, this remembrance removes the rust of forgetfulness or sinfulness encrusted over the heart. And this kind of contemplation can be regarded as a mode of tawheed, an integration, a making one, a kind of communion in which human love is united with divine beauty. The love in the heart of the reciter is united with the beauty of the uncreated Word of God. This communion, at once sacramental and aesthetic, has immense practical consequences for anyone concerned with the relationship between human art and divine revelation. For when the heart is attuned to the divine harmony conveyed by and within the revealed word, it is better able to discern the traces of that harmony, the archetype of all beauty, within the entire field of formal manifestation. The phenomena of virgin nature around us, and the phenomena of sacred art. This underlies the importance of the relationship between the artistic creativity of the artist and the contemplation of divine unity of the spiritually attuned individual. For the artist in Islam is first and foremost one who witnesses the evidence of God's oneness and beauty in the handiwork, literally the sunnah of God, a term used in verse 88 of Surah 27, which allows us to refer to God as Asaniya, literally the artisan. Moses, we are told, is fashioned by God for God's own self, in verse 41 of Surah number 20, Surah Taha. Wastana'tuka linafsi. This means that every messenger of God is a supreme work of art produced by Asaniya, the supreme artisan. Here, it should be stressed that contemplative affinity for the unitive dimension of divine beauty lies at the basis of all true artistic creativity. For without a sense of the unique, that is the one and only source of creation, there can be no intuition of the immanent root of the harmony embedded in creation, and thus no sense in which the sap flowing from this root both penetrates and unites the whole of creation. Without this intuition of the unitive source of the harmony of the created order, there can be no sense of the beauty of God's creation, and still less any possibility of producing oneself a work of art which conforms to the divine archetypes or principles of beauty. Only this kind of art, reflecting the work of the divine artisan, can be called art in the strict sense. The modern tenet, art for the sake of art, is to be rejected in favour of the principle, art for the sake of the divine artisan. Art is therefore true to itself in proportion to its degree of conformity with principles that transcend the human order and are directly related to the divine nature. It should not be seen as the handmaiden of subjective whims, tastes, and passions. True art has nothing to do with the subjectivist reductionism expressed by the other shibboleth of modern art: beauty is in the eye of the beholder, even if there is a deeper metaphysical significance to that saying, which goes back to Plato, which we might speak about in the Q&A session. In the Quran, the mode of tawheed constituted by the conjunction of human love and divine beauty is rendered quite explicit. For the fundamental message which the Quran imparts to us concerning the intrinsic nature of reality is articulated in terms of the names and qualities God. all of which are described not only as beautiful, but as most beautiful. Al-Asma al-Husna. All of these names and qualities can be grasped metaphysically as aspects of being. Being itself is qualified as a totality in terms of beauty, husn. Some of the names of God are wrathful and fierce, such as Al-Qahar, the All-Conquering, Al-Muntaqim, the Avenger, while others are gentle and loving, such as Al-Latif, the Loving and Kind, and Ar-Rahman, the Infinitely or Lovingly Compassionate. However, their categorical definition is given in terms of beauty. They are all the most beautiful names, Al-Asma al-Husna. In verse 110 of chapter 17, we are told to call upon Allah or call upon Ar-Rahman. Whichever name you call upon, unto him belong the most beautiful names. So Ar-Rahman, the lovingly compassionate, and again I can explain perhaps in the Q&A session why I insist on love being used in the translation of the word Ar-Rahman, and not simply mercy or compassion, which is normally used. Ar-Rahman, the lovingly compassionate, is the closest synonym of Allah. It's the name which most clearly reveals the essential nature of the Divine. However, all of the qualities designated by the divine names partake of superlative beauty. Even if on the surface certain aspects of existence, certain names of God, imply aspects of existence which may not appear to be beautiful, nonetheless, in depth, all of these aspects, all of these names and qualities are integrated within an all-embracing mode of self-disclosure by God, and that self-disclosure is beautiful. Abdul Karim al-Jili, the 15th century Sufi authority in the school of Ibn al-Arabi, Sheikh al-Akbar, asserts that there is in truth nothing in being except beauty. The whole of the creation is constituted by the theophanic manifestation, tajalli, very, very important concept in Islamic spirituality. The means by which the supreme reality doesn't just reveal a message, but discloses the nature of that ultimate reality, a self-disclosure. The whole of creation is constituted by the theophanic manifestation, the tajalli of the divine names and qualities. And since these are all beautiful, everything in creation is beautiful. From this point of view, ugliness, al-qubh, does not cease to be ugly. Rather, it is seen as that which distorts or corrupts a pre-existing beauty. It is beauty which alone has an ontological essence. It's got an essence rooted in being. Archetype or an essence rooted in the ultimate reality. So it is beauty which is real, while ugliness is unreal, inasmuch as it does not possess an ontological essence. It has no root in being. Its root is only in the distortion or negation or perversion of being. So Jili says, ugliness cannot be found in the cosmos except by way of relationship. In other words, relationship with what can be found, which is beauty. Finding in Arabic, this word wujud, which we translate very simply as being, actually does mean to find, and it has a connotation of conscious finding of something. Also is related to the root wajd, which is bliss. So he says, ugliness cannot be found in the cosmos except by way of relationship with what can be found, namely beauty. So that which is ugly has no property of absoluteness, no non-delimitation, itlaq. Nothing then remains in being except absolute or non-delimited beauty. Al-husn al-mutlaq, which you could also just simply say, beautiful absoluteness. Absolute beauty. The principle here in question is graphically illustrated by the following image in the Quran. This is verse 17 of Surah number 13. God sends down water from the sky, so that valleys flow according to their measure, and the flood carries scum on its surface. As for the scum, it passes away as dross, but that which is a benefit to mankind abides on earth. Thus does God strike similitudes. Just as one does not confuse the scum for the water, so one does not confuse the ugly for the beautiful, or the true for the false. The scum is, as it were, generated by the water, from which it's inseparable, and from which it derives its very substance. But as a disfiguration of the substance, the dross, the scum, will pass away. The water remains. The water here symbolizes the beauty of reality, which is eternal. In contrast, that ugliness which disfigures it, and which is like the scum on its surface, is doomed to pass away. The verse immediately following this one brings home the metaphysical message of this analogy and its relationship with the eternity of beauty. Verse 18 of the same surah, number 13. For those who answer God's call is that which is most beautiful, is husna. And most of the commentators say that this husna actually is another way of referring to paradise. The manifestation of beauty is therefore the manifestation of a reality which is eternal. It's rooted in the eternity of the infinitely beautiful face of God. That face which is there wherever we turn, according to the Quran, verse 115 of Surah number 2. Wherever you turn, there is the face of God. Aynama tawallu fathamma wajhullah. By contrast, the appearance of ugliness is the transient scum on the face of beauty. It's governed by that nothingness to which it's doomed, and which it therefore is, even while it appears to exist, as something. Ugliness is nothing. Such is the metaphysical import of Geely's assertion that the only thing in being is absolute beauty, al-husn al-mutlaq. The relative phenomena manifesting beauty may themselves pass out of being as phenomena, but the principle they manifest is absolute. And this principle is the face of God, eternally real, infinitely beautiful. To spiritually perceive this face of God through all phenomena is to have what Fritjof Schuon aptly refers to as the sense of the metaphysical transparency of phenomena. That is, to see through phenomena to the archetypes which they manifest. These celestial archetypes are nothing other than configurations of divine qualities. So many aspects or expressions of the face of God. And to see the archetypes through phenomena is thus to see the face of God wherever one turns. In the following verse, 25 of Surah number 2, these celestial archetypes are referred to as paradisal fruits. Each time the people of paradise are given to eat from its fruits, they say, this is what we were given to eat before. And they were given the like thereof. All positive phenomena on earth are therefore at once projections and prefigurations of heavenly archetypes, while all negative phenomena are corruptions or negations of the archetypes. Thus they are negations of divine reality, for what negates divine reality is by definition non-existent. To say then that there is nothing but beauty in existence is to say three things essentially. One, God, being beautiful by essence, reveals something of his hidden treasure through his most beautiful names and qualities. Two, the theophanic acts, al-af'al, the acts by which this disclosure takes place of the names and qualities, these acts produce impressions, traces, or effects in the cosmos, athar. And these phenomenal effects constitute the cosmos in its entirety. So when it said in the Quran at verse 54 of Surah 5 that God loves them, his creatures, this means, according to Abu Hamid al-Ghazali, in his book on love in the Ihya al-Umuddin, that God only loves himself. For he loves nothing other than the theophanies of his own beauty. There is nothing in being except his essence and his acts, al-Ghazali writes. So in reality, he loves nothing other than himself, in the sense that he is the totality of being, and there is nothing in being apart from it. So, to the extent that we see the creation through the vision of God, the whole of creation will be seen as beautiful. In this light, one can understand better the meaning of verse 7 of Surah 32, He made everything, He made beautiful, everything He created. أَحْسَنَ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ خَلَقَهُ. If God loves what is beautiful, and He has made beautiful everything He created, it follows that the definitive aspect of God's relationship with His creatures is love of beauty. I was a hidden treasure, God says in an utterance much commented in the Sufi tradition. I was a hidden treasure, and I loved to be known, so I created the world. The treasure, Kanz Makhfi, is a treasure on account of its priceless beauty. It's this hidden inner beauty which God loved, and not just wished or desired to render known. And it is we human beings who can know the divine in all its fulgurating beauty, for we are made in the very image of that beauty. Truly, God made Adam according to his own form, his own surah, the prophet tells us in a saying echoing the words of Genesis 1:27. The very means by which we as human beings come to know God, therefore, is inextricably tied to the process by which we come to love God, to engage in the loving contemplation of divine beauty, and to conform ourselves more completely to that beauty in whose image we were created. We cannot love God without acquiring knowledge of Him, and conversely, we cannot know God without, as it were, falling in love with Him. In the Islamic ethical tradition, good and evil are simply described in terms of the polarity, beauty and ugliness, husn wa qubh. It could then be said that aesthetics is actually the heart of ethics in Islam, and aesthetics in turn is both a key to understanding metaphysics and to entering into the ultimate reality. The key link binding together the domain of ethics, aesthetics, and metaphysics is given in the prophetic definition of ihsan, which people translate normally as goodness or excellence, but literally it means to make beautiful. Al-ihsan, the prophet said, is that you should worship God as if you could see Him. And if you see Him not, He nonetheless sees you. Permanent contemplative awareness of God is the very core and summit of ihsan, of making beautiful. It's from consciousness of the divine source of beauty that one becomes muhsin. Understanding by this word, not just one who does good, outwardly, the normal understanding of al-muhsin, which we have repeated dozens of times in the Quran, the one who does good. Understanding by this word not just one who does good outwardly, but one who makes beautiful inwardly. Virtue being grasped here as inward beauty, and beauty being grasped as outward virtue in the felicitous formulation of Fritjof Schuon. Every virtuous person, every Mohsin, is therefore a kind of artist, his own soul being his work of art. As Ananda Kumaraswamy puts it, the artist is not a special kind of person, but every man is a special kind of artist. Imam Ali helps us to see the way in which the two synonymous terms for beauty, husn and jamal, intertwine, doing so in a remarkably revealing statement about the aesthetic dimension of the intellect. He tells us that the beauty or excellence of the intellect, the husn of the intellect, lies in its capacity to see the beauty, the jamal, of things both outwardly apparent and inwardly hidden. Husn al-aql, jamal al-bawahir wal-bawatin. He likewise stresses the role of love in the process by which the intellect comes to fruition. In a very simple, succinct sentence, أول العقل التودد, the beginning, or the beginning of the actualization, we should say in English, for understanding what this أول means, the foundation, the beginning, the means by which the intellect is brought to fruition. The beginning of the actualization of the intellect is the manifestation and assimilation of love. This word tawaddud is a very powerful way of expressing hub or hub, mahabba, or wadda. Tawaddud is a mode of intense manifestation of love that is at the same time an interiorization of love. The Imam uses this fifth form of the Arabic verb very frequently to emphasize the necessity of interiorization, this reflexive aspect of these actions. The Prophet as Habib Allah, the final section of the talk now. The Prophet as Habib Allah. Habib Allah can be translated both as the lover of God, but more frequently as the beloved of God. The Prophet was the perfect lover of God, seeing the divine beauty through all the veils of existence. He said famously, I saw my Lord in the most beautiful form, fi ahsani surati. I don't think that any mystic has given a more inspiring commentary on this saying than the Persian Sufi Ruzbihan Bakri, 12th century Persian Sufi. In one of the many places throughout his corpus where he cites and comments on this saying, we read the following. This is from his most famous work in the domain of what one might call the metaphysics of aesthetics, Abhar al-Ashiqin, translated as the Jasmine of the Lovers. It's the work which the Matheson Trust is in the process of translating. We hope to publish that in the coming year, inshallah. It's been translated into French by Corbin, but there's no English translation of this masterpiece of what I call the metaphysics of aesthetics. Bakri speaks about principial beauty, husne asli, or that beauty which pertains to the root of reality. He says, the Prophet shows that the mystery of the real, sirr haq, the mystery of the real is in the self-disclosing theophany of beauty, tajaliye husn. The souls of the lovers perceive in the beauty of primordial human nature, husna fetri, the reflection of eternal beauty. And they find in this symbol, that primordial human nature, they find in this symbol the key to the science which was hitherto unknown. This is why the Prophet said, I saw my Lord in the most beautiful form. And it's said in the Sufi tradition that he's referring to a beautiful man called Al-Kalbi. Dihya al-Kalbi, who was regarded as the most beautiful man of his time. Of course, the exoteric scholars frown on that, but in the Sufi tradition, they have strong reasons for upholding the authenticity of that saying, of the reference of this saying. Understanding the Prophet as Habib Allah, the beloved of God, helps us to appreciate why the Prophet plays such a fundamental role in all the Islamic arts, and particularly in the Ottoman calligraphic art of the Hilya, the inscription of his Hilya, the ornamental description, what's known more generally as the Shama'il literature, which depicts his beautiful qualities. If God loves beauty, according to our opening saying, then the Prophet, as the beloved of God, must be beautiful. To invoke blessings upon the Prophet is therefore to invoke blessings, along with God and his angels, upon this perfect manifestation of beauty. To invoke this beauty is potentially or actually to receive oneself a tenfold blessing, according to the Prophet, a blessing which opens one up to the inward assimilation of that beauty. Beauty of character, first and foremost, but also beauty as such, with all its metaphysical ramifications. Beauty is at one with reality, so here again the crucial link between the cultivation of beauty and the realization of Tawheed is affirmed. It's thus that emulating the Prophet as a beautiful role model, an uswa hasana, renders us beautiful and thus lovable unto God. And this is implied in the crucial verse of the Quran, which expresses the very goal that motivates us, or ought to motivate us as followers of the Prophet. Verse 31 of Surah 3 says, if you love God, the Prophet is told to say this in the Quran, if you love God, follow me. God will love you. For Ruzbehan, the lover of God must make a pilgrimage to beauty by passing through human love to spiritual love, and through spiritual love to divine love. The path of this pilgrimage follows the tracks of beauty to its original source. Then, and only then, can one's love of the beauty of outward phenomena be at one with the love of God. And this love is a form of union with the Beloved. The union is beautifully expressed by Ruzbehan in another great saying, one in which the aesthetic dimension of the principle of Tawheed is most clearly expressed. He writes as follows in relation to the famous verse of light, which is verse 35, surah number 24. In the measure that the lover perceives in the qualities of the beloved the primordial beauty, in the measure that the lover perceives this primordial beauty, husna asli, in the qualities of the object of love, the beloved, his love will increase. For the lamp of love is fed by the oil of eternal beauty. To understand this image, one has to really reflect upon the verse of light, to see the extraordinary power of this, the poetic and spiritual power of this image. The lamp of love is fed by the oil of eternal beauty. And again, for those of you who may not know the verse of light, you can go into that in the Q&A session. Such a union of love with beauty only comes about, according to Ruzbehan, when love searches for beauty in that which transcends the human corporeal dimension. He poetically says, the sadness of love washes away with its tears the ephemeral dust from the face of the eternal bride. Again, this requires a lot of reflection, and we can perhaps go into an explanation as to why it's the sadness of love that's required here. The lover comes to see that the beauty of the beloved can only be the beauty of God. As Ibn al-Arabi says in his chapter on love in the Futuhat al-Makkiyah, God is the zahir, the outwardly apparent aspect of every beloved thing. He's not just the batin, in other words. It's relatively straightforward to understand that God is the inwardly hidden dimension of every outwardly apparent thing. But here, Ibn Arabi is being provocative and saying God is the zahir, the outwardly apparent aspect of everything that is beloved. Apparent as such to the eye of every lover. If you have loved anything because of its beauty, you have only loved God, for He is the beautiful. He is Al-Jamil. When the heart of the lover is purified of all concupiscence, then one can speak about light upon light, nurun ala nur. For it is God alone who in truth sees His own beauty through the transparent veil of the human subject and in the measure of the transparency of soul or the faqh of the witnesser. This faqh, which is the poverty or emptiness which prefigures fana, the extinction that we mentioned earlier. Here we might profitably mention the classic love story of Majnun and Layla, which for Ruzbehan is the perfect illustration of esoteric tawheed, consummated through the purest possible love for divine beauty. When asked who he is, Majnun can only say, Layla. And this is identical to the proclamation that Ruzbehan himself makes. I am in love with myself without myself. Man bar man bi man ashaqa. So complete is Majnun's extinction in the divine beauty, of which Layla's physical form is a transient manifestation, that he turns away from the physical form, for it is now a distraction from the eternal beauty witnessed by Majnun through Layla. But he also witnesses the eternal beauty within himself, for both the perception of his own heart and the form of her manifested beauty have now become perfectly polished mirrors of the divine beauty. This is, I think, one of the most challenging and potentially transformative messages of Ruzbehan Bakri. Majnun, when he says, in answer to the question, who are you? And he simply says, Layla, he's expressing this principle that Ruzbehan is extrapolating from that great statement. He says, I'll repeat it. Majnun witnesses this eternal beauty within himself, for both the perception of his heart and the form of her manifested beauty have now become perfectly polished mirrors of divine beauty. Majnun's witnessing is God's witnessing. God has become the eye by which Majnun sees. And this means that Majnun has become the eye by which the divine sees its own beauty. The veils, both the outward forms and inward perceptions or inward cognitions, both these types of veils, outward and inward, have now been transformed into clear mirrors. Rather than idols, both forms and cognitions have become icons. Nothing but God sees, and nothing but God is seen. Both that which sees and that which is seen are transparent to divine beauty. God is beautiful, and He loves beauty. Is the reward of making beautiful anything but making beautiful? Al jaza ul ihsan illa al ihsan. Verse 60, Surah 55, Surah Rahman. The light sees itself through nothing other than its own light in this return of beauty to its source. And this return, this reintegration or reabsorption, is the consummation of Tawheed. The metaphysics of aesthetics stands revealed in this light as the reintegration of manifested beauty within its supramanifest transcendent source. And the aesthetics of metaphysics stands revealed as the inseparability of beauty from the ultimate realization of oneness. To conclude, God is not only beautiful by nature, He is continuously overflowing with beauty. just as the sun ceaselessly radiates and illuminates by its very nature. This beauty is cast into the mirrors of creation, which thereby display the innumerable kaleidoscopic expressions of this one and only beauty. It's by virtue of the different shapes and forms and colours of these mirrors that the one and only beauty of God assumes myriad forms, apparitions, and faces. But whatever be the created form in which beauty resides, it is always and exclusively the beauty of God, the face of God that is there wherever you may look. Finally, let's return to the prophetic mystery, the Haqiqah Muhammadiyah, the spiritual Muhammadan, the reality of the Muhammadan principle. This Haqiqah Muhammadiyah and its relationship with the Quran. The Prophet is described in the Quran as having a tremendous character, Khuluq Azeem, Surah 68, verses 1 to 4. According to the metaphysics of Tawheed, this tremendous nature is not exhausted by its human manifestation. Rather, this nature is a perfect reflection of the most beautiful names of God. These names and the qualities they designate are reflected in the spotless mirror of the Prophet's heart. And it is this which renders him not only the messenger of God, but also a dazzlingly beautiful disclosure of the very nature of God. Love of the beauty of the Prophet is therefore not only an indispensable principle in Islamic spirituality, it is also one of the principal dynamics within the contemplative process by which sacred art is produced in Islam. The essence of the Quran, what's called the mother of the book, Ummul Kitab, is identical to the essence or haqiqah of the unlettered prophet, al-Nabi al-Ummi. This word Umm means mother. So both the Quran in its essence and the prophet in his can be seen as aspects of what one might call a maternal principle. A maternal principle pregnant with the possibilities of cosmic existence. This maternal principle functions like a crystal through which the various colours hidden within the one colourless light become manifest. This crystal is the Haqiqah Muhammadiyah, the Muhammadan reality, which he referred to implicitly when he said, I was a prophet, when Adam was still between water and clay. Metaphysically, the identical statement of Jesus in the Bible when he says that before Abraham was, I am, the eternal reality of the Logos. Or let's call it the co-eternal reality of the Logos. This crystal, by means of which the various colours hidden within the one colourless light become manifest, this crystal, which is the Haqiqah Muhammadiyah, is that by means of which the beauty of the hidden treasure becomes manifest. There is thus no Islamic art worthy of the name that is not, to one degree or another, a symbolic expression of Habib Allah, the beloved beauty of God. The relationship between aesthetics and metaphysics in Islam can be summarized in the following adaptation of the double testimony. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadan Rasulullah can be adapted as follows to bring home this relationship between aesthetics and metaphysics. La jamila illal jamil, no beauty but that of the beautiful, and Muhammadun mir'at al-jamil, Muhammad is the mirror of the beautiful. This echoes the saying of Ruzbehan that the mystery of the real is in the self-disclosing theophany of beauty. The real discloses itself through beauty. Thanks to this aesthetic vision of reality, or this real vision of beauty, the dogmatic statement, Muhammad is the messenger of God, expresses the metaphysical principle, formal beauty is the revelation of essential reality. Thank you very much for your attention.